You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
South Korean club FC Seoul is in a little bit of trouble. Who has FC Seoul? We got our baseball league, right? Is FC Seoul in the? Are they relegated? Are they in the big league?
We don't know about them. We just know KT Wiz is getting hot. That's the only thing we know.
FC Seoul. Sure. Well, apparently they wanted to put some fans in the stands, so they did. Unfortunately for them, they were sex dolls. And there's a, you got to see them. They're clothed, but you can tell that they're sex dolls. And they put them in the stands sitting there, and they've got, you know, FC Seoul gear on, and, you know, I guess they're supposedly cheering or whatnot. But they didn't like empty stands, so they wanted to put some people, well, sex dolls in them.
I mean, I'm watching this, and I'm looking at this, and they got them 6 feet apart, and
yeah.
Everyone's got a mask
so
on.
Everybody's healthy. They've got a mask on.
And some of them are hot. I mean, you know, whatever.
Yeah, no.
Some of the quote-unquote premium mannequins, they're called.
Well, I mean, they went all out. Isn't it a little bit expensive to be manning your stands with sex dolls? Wouldn't that be? I mean, and these aren't the ones with the giant mouths that are just open. These are more elaborate. These are more.
They're premium mannequins is what they're called.
Yeah, premium. That's right.
Have you, did you see the number? There were 30 mannequins in total. 28 female, 2 male. Gee, wonder. Now, at most matches, it's a much heavier ratio of male to female. But for some reason, when they bring out some fake fans, it goes 14 to 1.
Well, here's the deal, though, is there, they sell sex more. Now, it's illegal to advertise sex there, so they're going to be in some trouble. I don't know if this breaks the rules of their baseball federation, but if you see, even on, some of them still have cheerleaders. Now, the Astros have picked up cheerleaders, which I think is a brilliant move. It was a brilliant move by Reed Ryan and greatly upgraded over the ball girls of the past. But they're still having, in Seoul, it's a big deal to have cheerleaders at baseball games, which we don't do here for the most part. We have cheerleaders at all our football events from Pee Wee to all the way, you know, obviously to the NFL. Mm-hmm. But they do it at baseball. And so maybe they thought, we got to have some kind of hotness out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's get some premium mannequins, as we would call them. Premium. And you could tell. Some of them are in T-shirts, and they're pretty. These girls are pretty well. Some of them are pretty well endowed. Anyway, it is. I just feel bad for FC Seoul for being in trouble. That's all.
Yeah, that's an interesting story. It was just 30 dolls, but 30 dolls got them in trouble.
Right. But
now, if they had been 30 dude dolls, we wouldn't hear anything about this.
If there were 30 what dolls?
Dude dolls.
Dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If they were just dudes like, hey, look at this. It's dudes. No telling what's in there, you know, if they're premium mannequins too, no one would care. They're just like, look at that. It's 30 dudes in there. Yeah, they're premium mannequins, but, you know, whatever. They're just watching baseball.
Right. Did you see Ed Oliver's in some trouble?
So let's get into this. University of Houston, former Houston Cougar Ed Oliver. You remember him. Doesn't like cold weather. Ed Oliver got in some trouble with a DUI, an unlicensed firearm, and then an open container in his vehicle. He was in Montgomery County, was driving back towing what is being called an ATV, and he was driving erratically. Another caller, another driver called in and said, hey, this guy's driving all over the place.
Right.
He was going like just flew through a construction area where it was reduced speeds. Pulled over. There's video of field sobriety tests that you can find online if you want to take a look at them. The first one is barefoot. Then he puts his shoes on for the next one. And he ended up being arrested. Both misdemeanors. The two he had were misdemeanors with the firearm. And I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. I don't think anything's going to happen. There's nothing that's going to happen to Ed Oliver, I don't think. But I shouldn't even say we'll see what happens. Nothing's going to end up happening, I don't think.
I don't know. Yeah.
You think he'll be suspended from the start of the season? I don't.
Maybe. He got a charge anyway. He might be. I mean, listen, I don't know. I don't know the case. Yeah, apparently he was driving a bit erratically, which is dumb, but he was out his ATVing or whatever. He was hauling his ATV, and he had some beer. He had an open container between his legs, and the cops said, actually, that he thought that he might have been impaired by something else.
But they couldn't find anything, though.
Yeah, nothing else. So we don't know that. But he'll probably catch something. He'll probably catch a game from the commish.
For what, though? I mean, they've got to prove he's got to be proven guilty. There's still a lot of stuff that has to take place. Of course, I guess they
at some point it will be adjudicated, and at that point, then you'll have your – maybe it won't be the first game of the year.
Is
but
that
at some
something
point,
that happens? I don't recall. Is this something that happens on a regular basis, a DUI, and they're suspended? Maybe it is. Maybe it's something that happens in the NFL. We just don't see it happen very often. I'm trying to think of how often it happens.
Well, yeah, a gun DUI plus a gun charge is not something the commission.
No, it just needs to be taken serious. Yeah,
yeah, the commission's just worrying about his racist league right now. So.
I mean, Chris Herndon last year, shout out to former Miami Hurricane Chris Herndon, suspended 4 games for a DWI.
Oh, okay. Wow,
violated the NFL's. A key player on offense was suspended 4 games Friday for violating an NFL substance abuse policy stemming from a June 2018 drunk driving arrest. So, yeah.
Was there anything? Was there any other words on how that happened? Was there a crash or anything like that?
Pleaded guilty in January to driving while intoxicating, all but ensuring a suspension. So, if Ed Oliver pleads guilty, he's probably going to catch something.
Wow, okay. Well, maybe it'll be 4 games.
According to the league's alcohol policy, a first-time offender gets a minimum 2-game suspension but can receive additional discipline if NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell determines there are aggravating circumstances, including extreme intoxication, property damage, or serious injury.
So, then 2 is probably what we're looking at with
unless that. Goodell is not a huge fan of the gun charge.
Yeah, and that's a wild card. That's a wild card. It was not brandished. It was in possession. It was not brandished. My guess is Ed Oliver, especially as a young player, one who doesn't have a background, I'll bet you he gets 2.
Now, Herndon was in an accident. It's a 2-car crash, so that might have added to what Goodell decided. But, yeah, you can get popped.
Yeah, yeah. But based on that, it would sound like Ed Oliver would get 2 games.
Yep. Yep. He's going to catch it. He's going to catch it. And, you know, if he's guilty and driving impaired, then that's what you get. The league doesn't want that stuff. Does not want that. Not on their watch. Not on Roger Goodell's watch. He's too busy.
I mean, he's not DeAndre
trying
Baker.
To find at least one candidate that can actually coach in the NFL.
We don't have to worry about you working for the league. You've put enough stuff on tape that you're out.
What are you talking about?
For the NFL. You put enough stuff on tape that they're going to be like, never, ever, ever let the Granato guy anywhere near us.
Right, right. No, you know what? I don't want to be part of that racist league. I don't want any part of it.
You don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, don't worry.
We already
got
an email about
I've
you
got,
circulated
I've got
last
morals.
Week.
I've got morals. You know what? I've got integrity, Lance. I'm not working for that.
My God, that's John Granato's walkout music.
Yeah.
Oh, look. Your guy Vince McMahon's got your walkout music.
It wouldn't be – I don't think it'd be that even upbeat, Granato's theme music. I mean, he only listened to like 4 bands, and one of them is – I mean, it would be something along the lines of this. he would come out to this and everyone would be like, what? What is this?
Sticks? Right.
Yeah. That or Jethro Tull. By the way, Ian Anderson is sick.
There's a guy with the flute. John's walkout music would feature a guy playing a flute.
And by the way, he's sick. And maybe...
Man, I'm seeing a lot of... Man,
fatally so.
There's a lot of sick people. Fred Willard, one of the... One of the great comedic characters, underrated. He passed away over the weekend. He was in Modern Family as Phil Dunphy's dad. But, you know, he was so good in all of the mockumentaries that were done by Christopher Guest. I mean, just brilliant in Best in Show. In really all of those mockumentaries, he was fantastic. So you should definitely... if you haven't seen those mockumentaries by Christopher Guest, 100% watch them. There's another one about an actor in a small town. Dale, something tells me you would have seen this movie. I don't know why, but have you ever seen that one? Have you ever seen it, John? The documentary of the actor waiting for Guffman.
You're a giant nerd. You have seen it.
Oh yeah, I 100% have seen it. Waiting for Guffman.
No, I haven't. I heard of it, but I hadn't seen it. 814 ESPN 97.5. When we come back, screw LeBron. Whoa. Screw him, okay? That's what I'm saying. Right now, though, I'm saying cheers to my man, Patrick Chastain, and his dad, Joe, and his grandfather, and all of the Chastains that since 1933. How do you sell cars in the city of Houston since 1933? Well, it's the number one commercial Ford dealership. What does that tell you? Businesses, smart businesses, know where to go. Smart businesses know where they're going to get the best deal because that's what you do. Smart businesses know that Chastain is going to take care of them, going to service them. Their service department for commercial vehicles, unbelievable. But Patrick says, wait a minute. We've been here and we've been doing this and we want to corner the retail market as well. So if you're somebody that's looking for that Ford car or truck, and you say, well, I go to the big dealers because I'm going to get the best deal. Not necessarily so. Because Patrick Chastain says, watch the deals I'm going to give you. Watch how I'm going to take care of you service-wise. You're going to be part of the family. You're going to love doing business. We will service everything we sell. We will deliver it. We will sanitize it and deliver it. We will give you a virtual tour. We will give you all everything. And I've seen people who are trying to 84 months, okay, of interest-free payments. 84 months. That's 7 years you can do this thing. The nothing down and no payments for 6 months. I've seen people fudging on those things before. But the bottom line is, give me the best deal I can get. And that's what you're going to get a Chastain for. Love those guys. I love being part of the Chastain family. You will too. Just 2 miles from downtown. 5 minutes. 5 minutes from downtown. Two exits from Highway 59 on 610. Not Hempstead. Homestead. ChastainFord.com. You're looking for the best deal on a Ford? Chastain Ford.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit InnovationMap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, 818 ESPN 97.5. 713-780-3776. And we say we're going to get you in right away. We will. Caleb is here. He wants to talk about the doc last night. What do you say, Caleb?
As a younger fan, I've learned a lot about Jordan and 90s basketball in general watching this. But watching the last two last night, I thought it was weird that Karl Malone wasn't in there. I just wanted your guys' opinions on that. Thanks.
Yeah, so Karl Malone, there's two things that I thought about with Karl Malone. One of them, John, did you see after one of the games after Jordan beat the Jazz where he comes out and Malone and Stockton are both sitting there waiting? And he shakes both their hands, and then they both get up and leave. It's like they had to wait to shake Jordan's hand and then leave. And then, of course, Malone also, after the series was over, got on the bus to congratulate the Bulls and Jordan. But Malone obviously just didn't want to be part of the documentary or wasn't asked. My guess was didn't want to be. But Stockton was, and Stockton said, you saw Michael Jordan didn't have anything to say about necessarily Stockton or any of those guys. I think one of the things that kind of bothered me a little bit about Jordan was his lack of, even right now, there's just a fundamental lack of respect for anyone that was put in his, that was even mentioned in his category. The idea that Gary Payton played good defense against him is just disgust, Jordan. Just disgust. Thank God they didn't mention Vernon Maxwell, because he would have just tried to obliterate Vernon Maxwell on TV. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Gary Payton was a really good defender. It's okay. And, you know, he kind of had to let him go about Reggie Miller. Reggie was extremely respectful on the documentary, but Reggie was a phenomenal competitor. I thought that really portrayed exactly who Reggie Miller was, where Reggie was a super competitive, loudmouth trash talker who was a hyper-competitive guy. And I thought they did, I thought it was a good idea to have Reggie Miller on there. I think Malone, number one, Malone, I don't know how Malone would have interviewed, first and foremost. Number two, Malone maybe just decided not to take part in it. I mean, there were plenty of guys who didn't take part in it.
Or he wasn't asked, one of the two. Stockton gave their side, and they don't want too much of the other side. I don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know. There are a lot. There are more than a few people you're wondering why wasn't he in it? Why wasn't it? But I don't know that it says anything, especially since they did show, and Karl Malone showed his proper respect for Mike. I don't know if they got along on the Dream Team. We don't know.
He did,
but like you said, yeah, they sat there and waited, and then I thought it was cool that Karl Malone went on the bus afterwards and thanked him or congratulated him and then left the bus. Yeah, and they showed that part. I don't know. You know, Mike might have said, I don't want Malone on. I want Stockton. Maybe he liked Stockton better after the Dream Team deal. I don't know. We don't know. Hey, there's some motivation. Maybe Karl Malone at some point, you know, said, hey, Mike, pass me the ball or something. Maybe he said, hey, Mike, could I get a shot or something?
Could be, just like you said. They said, Carl, do you want to be on it? No. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's usually one per team, I think. Like, you didn't – was there other – I don't know that there was anyone else from Phoenix other than Charles Barkley who was talking.
I don't remember that.
Reggie Miller, there wasn't anyone else.
Well, Jalen Rose, but he's part of
ESPN.
Oh,
that's true, yeah. ESPN, though. What were you saying?
Outside, obviously I know what he did for the game while he played and the legacy will live on. But is Michael Jordan a great ambassador for basketball now that he's not playing?
I don't think so. I don't think Jordan does a whole lot. This is what Jordan – this is the reality. As long as you're being open-minded about this, Jordan is about – winning, and Jordan is about Jordan. And I thought Joel Anderson wrote an article, and Joel is actually a local guy who has done some stuff on ESPN. He wrote something for Slate I saw last night where he said some things that made me uncomfortable because I didn't, but if I'm being open-minded, it is true. You only saw the connection with family, and maybe that's intentional, but where they asked Michael Jordan, there's that scene, hey, it's your wife on the phone, and he takes it, but then they stop. Like, there is no... and, of course, that's his ex-wife, but there's very little mention of family. Very little mention of family throughout. There's very little family shown. And if you want to be a sycophant, you could say something like, oh, well, Jordan was, you know, is probably private about that and doesn't want to include this, that, and the other. But, you know, there's also the side that maybe Jordan wasn't the greatest family guy either. Maybe that's something, we know that's something LeBron really likes and LeBron's really into. You know, part of Jordan is Jordan loved to win, but Jordan may have been selfish in other areas as well. That happens. That's not that unusual. You see that before, but it is part of who he is too. I mean, I think he loves to win. He wasn't into social justice. He wanted to keep as many fans as broad as possible. And I think Michael's greatness expanded his empire and expanded the NBA. I don't know if he went on. What exactly do you mean by that, Dell? Like, in terms of brand ambassador?
Like, in terms of furthering the game that has nothing to do with his own self-interest. Like, Now, everyone's a brand, so certainly even guys, when they take trips to China, that's a money-making venture for them, even got currently in the league when they do those things and they go across around the world. But he doesn't appear to be one to, from what I can tell, further the game outside of his own interest.
I don't
at
think
all.
He does. No. I think Jordan is Jordan is a selfish person, you know, and more than likely he wants things his way. He has some of his selfish attitude is, when I say selfish, you have to put it in context. Like, I think he was a teammate, but you had to do things the way he wanted it. He had to be the alpha on his team, the driving force. Pippen was perfect, was the perfect beta to Jordan's alpha. I think that worked very, very well. But, you know, have you noticed that Magic Johnson, since his retirement, has gone out of his way to praise Kobe, to praise LeBron, to praise Jordan? I don't know that I've ever seen Jordan praise anybody other than some of the guys, and only a Kobe. Very few amount in his own era. He's not even friends with Charles Barkley because Charles gave, you know, Charles was doing his job, and now he's ended
Kobe,
that relationship.
He's praising Kobe.
Yeah, he has. But how?
Well, Kobe's death to praise him, but yeah.
I don't know how much praising it. You mean you just saw? Oh well, okay, yeah. At Kobe's at the funeral. That was really touching.
And
that
he
was,
said he's like a son to me, and mm-hmm. you know, or yeah. So I mean, a younger right. brother, whatever. Yeah, I mean that. But it took it took his death to
yeah.
For him finally
do you think
to,
we're gonna to look at? Do you think we're gonna look at Kobe differently, and that people will look at Kobe differently because? So everyone knew coming up, the reason a lot of people didn't like Kobe was because they looked at him as a Jordan biter. Like everything he did, he would do tongue stuff for a little bit. Then just everything about him, people looked at as like, man, this guy wants to be Jordan so bad. Yeah, want to be Jordan so bad. And Jordan, I think, respected it. But some of Kobe's a-hole attitudes and behavior was no different than Mike. So I think Kobe may get remembered a little differently too, like the Jeremy Lin story he told, where he walked into the locker room with that sorry ass Laker team, and he was injured. I guess was that the Achilles year, Dell, where he walked in and said, "I just want to come in and tell a lot of you bums goodbye, since tomorrow's trade deadline and you won't be here anymore." I mean, that's something that Jordan would do.
yeah. I love the Joe Klein story. Joe Klein celebrating. You know, you got that ring because of me. Yeah. The only reason you got that ring. That is funny. Joe Klein wasn't – I didn't even see Joe Klein in it.
I saw it. I saw him because when they were doing the Indiana series, that woman who became viral.
Oh, he was standing there. He wasn't dressed out.
He wasn't dressed out. He always kind of was peeking over his shoulder. What is she yelling about? That's as much Joe Klein
I saw.
There's
one where he's on the bus too. I see him on the bus in one scene, or a plane. Maybe it's an airplane flight. I saw Joe Klein, a picture of Joe Klein. I'm like, what the hell is Joe Klein doing there? I don't even know if he ever played.
What about when Mike grabbed the ball at the end and Randy Brown is on top of him? He looked like wrestling for the basketball with him.
Yeah,
and I'm like, Randy Brown, you didn't build up a sweat.
My favorite,
you didn't step on the floor, get off of Mike.
My favorite Randy Brown moment is and they showed it because it was the game 4 shot by Reggie Miller. Randy Brown is as you mentioned, not breaking a sweat. He's in his warm up still. On the bench at the end of the game, and Reggie drives into Michael's body, as Reggie talked about, gets open for the three that won game 4 in that 98 series. And Randy Brown is already walking back to the locker room. You see him under the Pacers basket, at least the basket they're shooting at. He's off the bench, walking back to the locker room as the ball is in flight. And Reggie makes it, and he's about, I don't know, 5 to 6 feet off the bench, walking back, and then he realizes there's more time on the clock. Randy Brown knew the shot was going in. He thought, oh, that's game 5. We're going back to Chicago. It turns out Michael had one more shot, double pump, missed it. But that's the only thing I remember about Randy Brown. And I remember that because they used to show that shot a lot on NBA on NBC as part of their highlight package leading into the game.
Do you guys remember where Randy Brown – do you know where Randy Brown started his collegiate career?
Where he started his collegiate career?
Do you remember where he ended it?
Don't remember. No, Randy Brown is, yeah. No,
he's either New Mexico or New Mexico. I think he's New Mexico State. He started it at University of Houston.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I really, yeah. Randy Brown trivia, I'm going to lose.
Yeah.
I'm going to lose Randy Brown trivia.
Contest. Yeah, he was, I'm almost positive he started.
First team all Big West, Randy Brown. You don't remember him, John?
Yeah.
New Mexico State.
Oh,
NBA
no, I remember
champion,
him because
Randy Brown.
He scrapped against the UNLV squads. They had a good team. That New Mexico State team was a good team, and he scrapped against Larry Johnson and those UNLV squads. So that was one of those. Those are one of those late night West Coast battles that we couldn't wait to watch UNLV. Like UNLV was a whole separate deal, where UNLV was destination programming in basketball.
Well, apparently, Randy Brown has a history of being a snitch. If you believe Wikipedia. After his he became an assistant coach for the Bulls, and apparently during the 2017 season there was a bit of strife between owners and front office and management, and allegedly Randy Brown was the mole reporting on players' activities and telling management about it. Like, he was a coach, so maybe that's part of his responsibility, but he apparently was alleged snitch during the Bulls 2017 season.
So he could have easily been part of this era.
Well,
the snitch era.
Well, apparently.
Uh-huh. Well, okay, when we come back, we'll dive deep into Luke Longley trivia.
The great Australian Luke Longley?
Yeah, yeah. Now, when we come back, we'll do that right here on ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5. Bill Barnwell, Texans hater, back at it. Ranking NFL teams with the worst off seasons.
Do we just get the same thing over and over? Is there any? Let me guess. Texans are the worst.
Texans are by far the worst.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I
know our new sports map video. What it's going to be?
I mean, he makes a few good points here, Lance.
No, we are. Yeah, we're all on board. Hello, I'm a.
Well, here's what
I'm
he
a
said
baritone.
Went right.
I'm in the choir.
Here's what went right. 2-year, $3 million deal for Jalen Watkins. Chargers, former Chargers defense, Eagles and Chargers defensive back. Upgraded their special teams coverage units, Eric Murray and Michael Thomas. Second round pick, Ross Blacklock. So those are the good things. Now the bad things. And the list goes on and on and on and on. So DeAndre Hopkins, obviously, is number one. But picking up David Johnson's contract is right there. Bradley Roby, 3 years, $36 million. Randall Cobb, 3 years, $27 million. Kyamie Fairbairn, 4 years, $17.7 million. Eric Murray, 3 years, $18 million. $4 million, A.J. McCarron. Laremy Tunsil, 3 years, $66 million. Boy, he threw some money around, didn't he? And then picking up David Johnson's $12 million deal this year? Goodness gracious.
Mm-hmm.
He threw some money around. And the team reportedly attempted to assign Carlos Hyde to an extension, but didn't get that done. So instead of paying him that money, you pay David Johnson that money. Just throwing away Hopkins when you're seeing the Stephon Diggs trade, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's extensive. Second worst offseason, the Bears. Third worst offseason, the Patriots. And then, you know, the typical, the usual suspects, the Lions, the Rams, Packers.
Whatever.
Packers.
Barnwell, shut up. Bill O'Brien has a response.
I don't really care about, you know, draft slots. I don't care about money. I don't care about any of those things.
I can't believe that was said out loud by a quote-unquote general manager.
Well, he wasn't a general manager at the time.
Yeah, that was the Zoom meeting, I thought.
No, it was during Hard Knocks.
No, that was a press conference.
A team meeting when he was trying to tell guys that, hey, yeah.
that was long ago?
Everyone's even. No draft slots, money, draft picks don't matter. It's about who performs.
I've been taking it out of context this entire time.
The best thing is when you grab things out of context and then play them, but it still fits.
No. That was in Hard Knocks, right?
Yeah, he was talking to his team about how all that stuff doesn't matter. It was just about the guys and who's on the field.
Yeah, I don't
stuff.
Care where – what he meant was I don't care where you were drafted or how much money you paid.
Oh, I thought that was a Zoom meeting recently. I don't care about draft picks. I don't care. I was like, damn, I can't believe the GM is saying this. Because it fits with how he's operated.
Well, he wasn't lying.
That's why I thought it was recent. You talk about I don't care about money. It's like, yeah, David Johnson. I don't care about draft picks. Yeah, Laremy Tunsil and Hop and all that other stuff. Like, I thought it felt real. It felt like recent.
Yeah, no. Well, it's
are you
accurate.
Sucking me
no,
into Bill listen, O'Brien talk again?
Listen, it was a foreboding. It was he forewarned us. I don't care about draft slot. I don't care about money. He doesn't. He wasn't lying. Listen, that's the first time I heard Bill O'Brien not lying to us. He was telling the truth. He doesn't care. He didn't care then, and he doesn't care now. He doesn't care about money. He doesn't care about Cal. Is amazing because if I'm Cal, I'm like, hey, Bill, how about Kyabe Fairbairn? Really? How much we giving him? How much did we give him? That's a kicker. And by the way, he misses some. And what? Randall Cobb, what now? David Johnson, how much? What? I mean, you want to talk about he just doesn't care about Cal's money. If I'm Cal, I'm like,
well, it's really Bob's money. Let's be clear here. I mean, Cal's just spending his daddy's money anyway.
Well, it's not daddy's money anymore. Daddy's not here.
I'm aware, but Cal, look, we all know if you don't actually earn the money, it doesn't feel as bad when it leaves your wallet. Like, it's not my money. I didn't earn this money.
No. If you get it, if somebody gives it to you, it's yours.
No, but it's easier to spend it, and it doesn't feel as bad because you didn't put in the work to make it.
Well, that is true, but it's still yours.
It's yours.
And you still... Wait a minute. When it's gone, when Bill O'Brien spends it all and there ain't no more money, all right?
Understood. I understand.
To go to galas and to, I don't know what Cal does, if you want to. I don't have, apparently, if you look on his wiki, he's like on four or five different boards where people just sit around and they talk about, you know.
What does that mean when you're on the board of something?
It means you go in and they explain, the business explains how they're doing. And you advise them, and you tell them, oh, well, okay. Or you look at their plan, and I could just see Cal going, yeah.
Do you get paid for that?
Yes, you get paid for that. Yes, you get paid to be on board.
Why can't
well,
I be on a board
in
of
some
something?
Instances, in some you don't. Now,
I don't want to be on the free boards.
Like our board are our biggest
I want to be
investors.
On the pay me board.
Right. Our board, I know a guy that's a professional board dude. He just goes and he's on a bunch of boards and he gets, like six figures to be on a board. And every 3 months they meet.
I'm looking at Kyabe Fairbairn's numbers and considering since his time here. And the contract, I think, is something that had some foresight and was worthwhile considering he probably had his worst combined year here when you combine missed field goals and missed extra points. So I feel like a great decision was made.
Yeah, we don't care about that. I don't care about missed field goals. I don't care about if you're healthy on the field. Mm-hmm. I don't care if your last good season was 2016. I don't care about draft slots. I don't care about money. I just care about, you know, I don't know what he cares about anymore, if you want to know the truth.
Fairbairn missed a combined 10 kicks, which was more than he had missed in his previous 2 years, not combined, but you just look at him. In 2018, he missed a combined 7 kicks. In 2017, he missed a combined 8. So this was his highest percentage of missed kicks or highest amount of missed kicks. I'm like, you know, just toss him a couple bucks, a couple shillings, shekels.
A couple shillings? A
couple shekels.
A couple shekels.
Wait. A couple shillings?
Yeah. Hey, man, no. I know you missed more kicks than you ever have with us. Here, take this.
I mean, 4 years, 17, we're paying a kicker that missed 10 kicks almost over $4 million a year. Oh, wow. Almost $4.5 million a year for a guy who missed 10 kicks.
Scared money don't make money, John.
Good point, Dell. You got to reinvest. Maybe Kyabe can be on the board.
Yeah, maybe he can be on the board with Cal.
All right.
Maybe that's why he's getting paid more. He's on the board. So
he's on the board. That's
which
all.
Which Hawaiian has made more so far? Tua or Kaimi?
Well, Tua hasn't. Has Tua even gotten a check yet? Maybe a signing bonus.
No, it's not checks. There's no paper trail. What's wrong with you?
You don't think UCLA broke out the bag for Kaimi?
No. You don't break out the bag for a kicker.
Yes, you do. You do it when if you're a Houston Texan.
Well, no, Bill's starting a new trend here that maybe the rest of the league is going, oh, really, Bill? Here's another one. A dude that misses 10 kicks. Way to set the market, Bill. A 10 missed kicker getting 4.5 a year. Congratulations. Nice job, Bill. The rest of the league is like, what the bleep?
The rest of the league is like, cool. You're not resetting the market on quarterback. I mean, on kickers, we're fine. Keep doing moves like that. Like I like Fairbairn just fine. I'm okay with Kaimi Fairbairn. I don't know why you became a Kaimi Fairbairn.
Did you feel good when you missed that kick at the end of the second quarter against Kansas City?
He's had some misses that weren't great. I think he's not somebody I'd cut right now. Let's put it that way.
We also don't pay him.
He was an undrafted free agent.
You don't pay him $4+ million for being.
Y'all want to just keep saying, hey, Bill, you spent too much money for somebody.
You've moved past that?
Yeah.
I already know that
Nordstrom Bill is going to pay top dollar for everything that comes out.
You're not beating. How's that Nick Martin contract?
That's great. That, Whitney, all of them. You want to point to one contract that's bad?
No.
There's like six of them. It's fine. This is fine. Put me in a house on fire. This is fine.
Fair enough.
I just need this is all what it is, and I'm not going to even get upset about it. $4 million kicker. No problem. I hope John Weeks gets his bag.
It's not your money. What do you care?
Yeah. What do I mean? No. Hey, great. How much is the punter getting?
Well, is he up for a new deal?
You can't wait to be up for a new deal with the Texans.
Yeah.
It's the best time ever.
You don't even have to be an elite player.
Greatest Christmas ever. Where Bill Belichick would let guys walk. Guys who are up for new deals now, as long as your name is not Jadeveon Clowney, and then I can't really count Hop because he wasn't really up for a new deal. We know how that deal went down. But, man, does it go good for you.
You know,
man, do you – I mean
– when they talk to their friends around the league and they're like, man, you're up for a new – you're up – this is the final year of contract. How are you feeling? Well, I show up to practice every day. Bill doesn't yell at me. I think I'm going to be getting paid top dollar, top five in the league because I'm a good guy. I don't miss practice, and I'm okay. And I'm an okay football player.
No baby mamas. You know what?
I'm in.
Okay, so Kaimi Fairbairn, third highest average salary amongst kickers. Nick Martin, third highest salary amongst centers in the league. Let's see Edge here. We got to go outside linebacker with. Don't we have to go with Whitney? Outside linebacker. Let's see where Whitney falls.
Bet you it doesn't make you feel good.
Average seller. Let's see. Oh no. Let's see. He's down the list. Whitney's getting ripped off.
Whitney's getting ripped off.
Yeah, like Khalil Mack and Von Miller and Dee Ford and. Olivier Vernon.
Dude, I swear, the only people getting raises during the pandemic are the Texans.
Yeah.
Everyone else is downsizing. The Texans are like top dollar.
Whitney's only 13.5. He's getting ripped off. And it's way down. It's like 12th or so. Whitney's like.
It's got to be a little upset.
I got to redo my deal.
Yeah, I mean.
I got to redo this. I know I just redid it for $54 million for my 7.5 sacks or whatever he got. For my half a sack over 9 weeks. I only got $54 million. That's a ripoff.
Can't be making less than Matt Judon. Got to switch that up. Got to go in.
Right.
Got to go get a bigger bag.
Matt Judon's got 15.8.
Bud Dupree's making more than him.
What kind of crap is this?
Bud Dupree. I know Bud Dupree had 11.5 sacks, but there's no way Whitney should be making less than Bud Dupree.
Right. There's no way. I mean, that's just BS. We got to get – you know what? Maybe we start a GoFundMe page for Whitney.
Did you see Spencer Dinwiddie was like, hey, if you guys – I think it was for Bitcoin. If you guys contribute $26 million to this Bitcoin, you can choose where I sign. Like he's like, guys, if you fund this, I will sign wherever you want. Your choice. As of last check, he had like $766. And the goal is like $26 million. No one cares about you, Spencer Dinwiddie. Not that much.
Oh, wow. Wow.
I think it's for something he wants to create, maybe even help society, but no one cares enough about where you play to
Spencer
contribute $26 million.
Dinwiddie. Oh my goodness. I mean Brady couldn't even get. I mean, that's just Spencer Dinwiddie. Know you who you are. Goodness gracious. 8:46 ESPN 97. That was our Texans suck at finances segment. We'll move on after this.
Your work, home, and work from home sports station. ESPN 97.5.
Please stay home. Please stay home. It's okay to be alone.
Just do it.
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Congratulations to LeBron. He's got a new project. Uninterrupted, the media company co-founded by LeBron James, is set to produce a documentary series about the Houston Astros sign-stealing scandal for, what is it?
Quibi? Way to go, Dell.
Quibi.
What is it? Quibi. It's a new, relatively new app that is only on your
short
phone.
Short stories.
Yeah, and it goes like 4 or 5 minutes at a time.
It's like TikTok for documentaries.
Yeah. Well, or anything, dramas and TV shows.
Yeah, actually, yeah, short stories. It's just short stories.
And instead of like 35 or 30-minute episodes that we would get on normal TV, they do them like 7 minutes at a time.
You've heard the term snackables for video content for the short attention span generation.
Yeah.
That's what it's considered a snack.
Unfortunately,
the documentary will transcend the baseball diamond to explore larger themes of greed, cheating, corruption, sportsmanship, and social media activism.
This is about the Astros?
Yeah. No, larger issues.
You mean in general this company is going to
transcend the baseball diamond, Lance?
But yes. Not this one documentary isn't going to.
No, I think so.
Yeah, the documentary.
Social justice issues with the 17 Astros?
Social media activism, is that what it was?
Or social media activism?
What was the dude who did all the research on
Twitter? Oh, that's what it is. John Boy. That's what it will be.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, thank goodness. I can tell this isn't going to have a anti-Astro slant. It's going to be awesome. It's going to actually tell the whole story and not be at all slanted.
Kind of like that anti-Isaiah Thomas slant the Last Dance had?
No, that wasn't. That was just the truth.
You notice how, so one of the arguments against Jordan has been against this, because I wanted to see what people, why they didn't like the doc or what they didn't like about it, or just any negative takeaways. And one of them that I've seen from a couple spots is that Jordan kind of gets to fade into the background and not have to answer. Like, there was nobody putting Jordan's feet to the fire about the Isaiah Thomas stuff. We all know Jordan kept Isaiah Thomas out, but he didn't get pressed on it at all on his own documentary. There was no pressing of it.
There's
somebody who actually has video, who has audio tapes where Jordan admits to, yeah, he kept Isaiah Thomas out of there. But he was never pressed on they allowed Jordan to kind of take the storytelling to not include Jordan whenever it was inconvenient for Jordan, which I didn't really think about, but it is true.
All right.
I mean, we always assumed Jordan kept him out, and Jordan said he didn't, and I just thought, you're lying. You 100% kept Isaiah Thomas out. What are we talking? Why are we even pretending?
Well, that's why
he
Ken Burns said I would never do this because Jordan has final editorial say. as opposed to, you know, telling the whole complete story. He's on, he can tell his side of the story.
Like, you never saw his kids interviewed other than the Utah Jazz stuff. What kind of dad was Mike? Was he there for you? Any of that stuff? See, if it were a true documentary, it would have been very uncomfortable for Michael, because it would have Michael's wife, Michael's kids, Michael's daughter. It wouldn't just been about Utah Jazz fans are bad, which we all know they're born terrible, but it would have been some uncomfortable themes about was Jordan a good family guy? It might have got into some womanizing stuff. It might have got into some of the darker stuff that Jordan would not want, and Jordan didn't want you to see that, and so you're not going to see that.
No,
you know, a true documentary is going to have some stuff that you really don't care for.
No, right. And yeah, and Mike probably said, oh, my immediate family, my mom you could put in it, my dad we'll talk about, but my kids, we ain't talking about.
They're off, yeah. Kidding. And I still liked it. I still love the documentary, but as somebody who has taken in a crap ton of documentaries in my life, I do recognize, like, I just got done watching L.A. Originals. Have you guys seen that one yet? Mm-mm. So it's about Mr. Cartoon, is a famous tattoo artist and a lot more, and there's another guy, Esteban, who is a famous photographer, and it captures how they were at the heart of L.A. culture in the 90s, and if you were anybody, you went and got a tattoo from Mr. Cartoons, and I mean, it was just, it's unbelievable the amount of people, and they paid $50,000 to $60,000 for a tattoo, and how it captured, you know, it just captured L.A. culture, these two guys, and the photographer. He's on tour with Cypress Hill, House of Pain, this group, Snoop Dogg, all this stuff. But at the end of the doc, but you could sense, you know, the stories were being told in such a way that I was like, man, this is feeling a little bit weird. And a lot of the documentary footage came from the photographer. He happened to have videotape running on a lot of this stuff in the 90s. And so at the end, there's a part where it shows how the photographer, in a medium that has gone downhill, as more and more people can be their own photographers, how his life has been reduced to unpaid debts and bills. And then Mr. Cartoons, who is the unbelievable artist who charges $60,000 and up for tattoos, and how his life has just taken off with everybody having tattoos. You could see the juxtaposition, which I thought was pretty cool. I mean, it was not cool, but it was, you know, it was a real storyline of these two great friends have gone in different directions financially. And then at the end, you see that Esteban is one of the guys, is an executive producer. And, you know, you always wonder when somebody has any kind of, but he's got all the footage. So that's the only way this gets made, is because he had all the footage. But you do realize that you're only going to see certain things. I would rather see the Jordan documentary than get a Jordan documentary. Now, if somebody could do a second Jordan documentary that paints him in a more negative light, I think they would. I just don't think they'll get cooperation. I really don't. I don't think anyone will cooperate with something like that.
Well, Jordan's going to say, I already did. It's done. That's over. I'm done.
Yeah.
And you can go ahead. But yeah, he won't cooperate.
You had some books that have already come out like that, but not a doc.
Yeah, no. We can't assume that he wasn't a good dad, so I don't know. I don't want to do that because, you know, just because he didn't, he might want his privacy. Listen, that dude hasn't had any privacy. You might say, my kids are off limit.
Yeah, it may be, but if he was, you wouldn't know.
We don't know. No, but we don't know. So, I mean, just the assumption that, oh, well, he must have been. No, we don't know. We have no idea.
We know that they were not asked that question.
Well, we do know that he.
Let me put it this way.
I'm not about husbands. I don't know.
Jordan, a good dad. Jordan, a good family man. Don't you think if that were the case, that would have made it on in his own doc to humanize him?
Or he might have just said, when my kids are out, we're not put my kids in it. I don't know.
Because they're in their 30s.
Again,
now.
We don't know. 856. Now, that's the first time I had seen his boys. And now his son played for Central Florida, I want to say?
Yeah, I think it was a Florida school.
He played for Illinois first, so I think he
transferred. And then went to Central Florida.
Yeah, I think so.
Actually, I was at Central Florida, and he was there. He was on the team. I don't think he got much PT when Houston was there. I was there for a game at Central Florida. But yeah, I mean, we don't know, Lance. We just don't know why he did that or why they weren't part of it. 857 ESPN 97.5. 713-780-3776. But listen, maybe someday when he's dead, the kids might come out and they'll have the story. But right now, I think they know if they say anything negative about him, what's going to happen.
It feels a lot like Logan Roy. All the Roy children are afraid of Logan Roy.
Well,
Jordan killed children, better keep quiet.
Do you think they want to catch the Scotty Burrell treatment, or they want to catch? No, they want.
No one wants the Scotty Burrell treatment ever.
No, or Smith, LeBradley,
LeBradford Smith.
No,
LeBradford Smith is making. He's just sitting there like, why are you making stuff up? I'm sorry, I did my job and scored.
Right.
I apologize about scoring. I'll try to hold back next time.
Right. No.
Or the other thing, what about in golf? Whenever you beat him too much and then he just welches on a bet?
That's that. Well, what about that? Yeah, apparently.
That's like low-rent stuff.
You know what? The all-time greats do that. Apparently, Tiger, if you didn't catch him before you left the course, you weren't getting it.
That's okay. Like low. You should do a whole documentary on guys who welch bets.
Right. Oh, I got a couple. I got a couple.
That is low rent.
We were talking about an ugly one yesterday from the former Astro. But it's a pretty good story, too. 858 ESPN 97.5. You know what else is a good story? Craig DeSurf.
Craig DeSurf's great story. All the people in Angleton. I was down there. I drove my car down there. I got hit by an uninsured driver. I had to go through the whole insurance process. And, man, Gulf Coast Chevy, well, they've got two different dealerships out there across the street from each other that are both Gulf Coast, same ownership. And I went to the collision center. Couldn't have made it easier. Got that loaner vehicle. Got the collision. Got it sent in to collision. They made it quick with the in and out. They're dealing directly with the insurance adjuster, so I'm out of it. There is no, I don't have to be middleman. It couldn't be easier. And that's the thing about Gulf Coast Chevrolet Buick GMC when it comes to just standard service. They're the best. When it comes to sales, Ned across the street, my neighbor, said, hey, I'm looking at, I've had this great vehicle, and I've had it since, you know, for forever. I think he told me 2008. He goes, it's time to get a new vehicle. What can you tell me about your guys? And I explained. I said, look, they're in Angleton. They will deliver the vehicle to you. They give you really aggressive pricing on your trade-in value, and they've got some great programs right now. 0% financing for 84 months. You've got 0% payments for 120 days. These are part of the programs that are available right now for well-qualified buyers. And if you'd like to find out more about it, just go to LandZCars.com. You can see the entire inventory that they have in their selection. And the best part is they're great people who are looking to make great prices for you and great opportunities so that you can experience your new home away from home, which is your vehicle right here in Texas. They're in Angleton, Gulf Coast Chevrolet Buick GMC. Go to LanceZCars.com.
This is Carlos Correa, All-Star and World Series champion, and big fan of Gulf Coast Chevrolet in Angleton. No one will treat you better. Chevy, find new roads.